And we've got Dr. Keith Scott Mumby. And yes, as promised this hour, we will take your calls. But first, we'll conclude talking a little bit about what the SENAR is, or SKENAR, or however you want to pronounce it. But I've had three people write and say, can you spell it? Sure. SCENAR. It is a Russian device. And if you go to Dr. Scott Mumby's website, you can get all sorts of information above it. And there's a wonderful link at Coast to Coast AM. So that's exactly where we'll pick it up. And then you're the star right here on Coast to Coast AM. It is Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. Keith Scott Mumby. And we just left you with the Star Trek-like device, which is absolutely amazing what it can do for you. And there's a lot of information online about that. But I left you in the middle of the story.
Right, let's go. Now, first of all, let me say, you couldn't make this story up. You really couldn't, so it's great that it was actually videoed. In British cities now, a lot of the streets have public surveillance videos, and the whole of this was captured, okay? My friend, Laurie Hache, she was walking down the street with her friend when a guy burst between the two ladies and buried an axe in the head of the guy in front and then ran off. He threw the axe away and ran away. So the guy collapsed on the pavement with his skull split open and his brain hanging out. Now, remember, that's kind of survivable. You know, trepanning, opening the skull, it's gone back thousands of years as a medical treatment. So that itself isn't necessarily going to be fatal. But it's certainly disastrous, okay? And it's a street in a city, you know. It's not as if it took place in a hospital. Anyway, they called the ambulance, and my friend Laurie happened to have a SKENAR with her. So the best she could, she called for some towels. There was a body shop right where this happened, so they got some towels out, wrapped the guy's head, and then she put the SKENAR on the wound, and that's all she could think of doing was holding a SKENAR over the wound until the ambulance arrived. The man kept sort of drifting in and out of consciousness, but he didn't actually, you know, pass out into a deep coma or anything. Finally, he was taken to hospital, and you know, he was given the appropriate treatment. And she went to see him later to visit the man, and the surgeons knew the story and talked to him. So they were amazed and said, "I don't know what you did, but there was no brain swelling. We would expect, you know, quite pronounced brain swelling in this situation, and that's the danger, and that's what would have killed him." Well, we know that the SKENAR is very good at reducing swelling. So, you know, this bit of very prompt and very peculiar first aid actually saved this guy's life. But the best part of the story was, as I said, it was videoed. So when my friend Laurie called home to her kid, she said, Mummy's going to be a little while. I'm involved in it. The kids said, oh, we know, we saw you on TV. And apparently they'd used the public surveillance video, rebroadcast it on TV, with a story about this mad woman who used the TV remote control on the guy's broken head.
That's great.
You couldn't make it up, but you know, it's true. The whole thing was filmed.
That's the TV remote control, and it worked. Yeah, that's how
brilliant this machine is.
You know, that's
somebody
classic.
Somebody buries an axe in my head. I just hope there's somebody with a SKENAR nearby. I really do.
Yes, you betcha. All right. Well, I promised that we would, go to guest torture, open up the floodgates here. And Jim is in Emeryville, California, west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, I'm glad to be on. You were talking a little bit earlier about people who are adopted kind of patterning after the adoptive parents and grandparents. Well, what do you do when you're born to a single mother, taken care of by one grandmother, then the other, then you go in four foster homes, one orphanage with two house mothers, then you go to live with your real mother, with your stepfather, and I think that's the end.
Okay, that's a fine model, and I could see why that would be a problem to a person. It's a sure formula for trouble, isn't it? But the answer is really very simple. You know, we're not confined to just talking about any parent. You can talk about anything you like. I mean, one of the great stories we had was a guy had a liver transplant that wasn't taking, so we just had him talk about the liver and got the pattern, and of course it was a different person. Well, of course it was, because the liver came from a different person. But, you know, by processing that, then in fact the graft took, so that's another sort of miracle cure. So what we do, we can do, if a person's been adopted, you can do all the adoptive family, but you can do the blood family as well. If they've been foster parents, or, you know, you're raised by an auntie, any of these things are valuable. You can voice pattern any significant person in a person's life. You can voice pattern events. You know, for example, somebody's if I hear something like this, I was in a car crash 15 years ago and I've never felt the same since, I would go straight for the car crash and I wouldn't start with parents and grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
So does that answer it really? I mean, the answer is you just cover everything. You know, if you think that foster father might have been a significant influence, then just do a voice map on it.
So if some of them weren't really, I didn't bond with them, then that wouldn't necessarily be significant to me.
No, you can't guess ahead who's significant. I mean, sometimes you can. But, you know, you go through, and very often it's different to what the person thinks.
You know, they
think mum is great and father was a swine, and when it's all finished, they realize they're back in love father again and realize he just did the best he could, but he didn't have enough information, screwed everything up. And sometimes, you know, especially in abuse cases, I've noticed this, sometimes they turn, for example, father abused them, and that was obvious, and they've hated father all their life. But they go through this process and shift the energies, and they can forgive him. And all of a sudden, they turn on mum, and they realize that mum was actually the problem because she didn't defend them. And they suddenly have this whole issue with mother. All that comes to the surface, too. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, of course, the great thing is all this poison can come out, and once it's aired, there's fresh air through the whole thing, and people can recover and they can heal.
Mm-hmm.
Very often, it's different to what you think. In fact, I invented a cynical rule many years ago, not just for the vocal, in fact, long ago, and I called it the 180-degree rule, and it's the real truth is often completely around from what you think. It's not just a bit different. It's totally the other direction.
Oh, you betcha.
What you thought it was.
Jim, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Tying in on that, when Jim was asking about, a variety of foster care people, one of the things that I picked up in some of your writings was that the heck with the foster people, the heck with the relatives, the heck with the adoptees, there's ghosts, there's ancestors, there's soul fragments. What's going on here?
Oh, yes. Now, this has been a fascinating part of the work. Yes, every now and again, the ancestors, long dead. And the ancestor shows up. I mean, my wife is, I call her my spook hunter. She's very good at just sort of detecting these entities and energies. I often know there's something wrong. You know, I tend to sort of talk myself down on this. She keeps saying, no, you're good, really. But I usually call her. Anyway, let me give you an example. This is a guy who was a businessman, a real hard-headed, he was a construction guy, the typical pot belly and a hard hat man, hard as nails. But he'd been raised by mum. He thought she was an absolute bitch and had abused him and hadn't got a good word to say for her. Sit him in the chair, after we do the pattern, we play mother's pattern back. And within no time at all, he's starting to change and he's starting to cry and say, I realize you did the best you could. Life was rough. You didn't have any money. And within about 30 minutes, he was, I love you, mummy. And I'm sure you were a good person. Yada, yada, yada. Anyway, he suddenly stopped and said, is there a draft in here? It's suddenly gone very chilly in here. Well, there were no windows open or anything, so I knew what that meant. So I went to get my wife and said, is there something in the room here? So she came in. She said, I can feel his mother's presence. In fact, it's very strong. I was kind of pushing against her when I came in the door. So we lifted the headphone. He's listening to music, lifted the headphone, said, your mum's here in the room. And he sobbed even more. And after about an hour, anyway, he'd gone through this whole process, and he felt that he'd actually healed for the mother as well. And I've heard this many times, that the ancestor, the troubled ancestor, comes in and there's forgiveness. But this entity was, definitely had an impact in the room and could be detected by other people. When it was all over, he said, it was so beautiful. He said, I could see the light. I was all ready for checking out of here. And I said to myself, thank goodness you didn't. I'd have got sued if you'd
been. Right. That's not the effect, yeah.
Anyway, as I was saying, that's the 180-degree rule. He hated and blamed her, and at the end he realized that, he loved her. Mm. She really had loved him and just done everything that she could. The whole thing healed amazingly.
Wow.
Another story was the woman who'd been in a car crash, and she kept saying things, I've never been myself, I don't feel complete. And when I hear these words, I think of the old shamanic tradition of soul retrieval. I don't know if you know this.
Yes.
That somebody's lost a part of their soul, or a soul particle has gone off. And I've learned to work with this even with the vocal, so I get them to do a voice pattern on the missing part. Because often it's been gone, 20, 30 years, and maybe it was a child part, and it's still a child part, whereas they've grown up. So you have to talk to this, voice pattern the part, and then it starts to move in. Now, if you've ever done one of these soul retrieval things, I've done a lot, and it's really extraordinary what happens. The person sobs like an earthquake. I mean, they're convulsed, and they describe all this sparkling, scintillating energy that's in sort of every cell of their body as this missing part comes back. And it's really strange, they often get phenomena like they forget things that they've learned in the meantime because the new part is just, you know, they have to sometimes walk it around the house and say, you know, this is a car, you know, this is what we use these days, and this is how we open cans now. You know, the part was from long ago. It's quite funny.
It's fascinating.
But this taught me that there's definitely some kind of non-local effect, and it puzzled me, Rolly, because sound, you know, quantum physics is really all about electromagnetic physics, and we know that kind of phenomenon. But sound, as far as I know, didn't have any quantum connection. So why was it non-local? So I went into research for it, and, you know, sure enough, I found it. There's a phenomenon where sound does cross over into quantum. It's called sonoluminescence. If you take a jar of water with bubbles in it and play sound at it, you have to tune the frequency. You know, it can happen at any frequency, so you just wind the knob up and down. But suddenly, at one particular frequency, the bubbles start to grow, to glow. They're phosphorescing, giving off photons, in other words, which is a quantum effect. So sonoluminescence proves that sound can cross over into the quantum non-local domain. And so all of a sudden, these strange happenings that, you know, they only happen sometimes, but they're very fascinating when they do, and the ancestor entity, the energy, actually shows up. Really fascinating to find that this quantum element in sound technology is great.
Well, it is. And, you know, not only do I have people calling, but I've gotten half a dozen emails from individuals saying, all right, I want to do this. And, of course, as I mentioned, the information I saw on your website is for practitioners to buy it. Is there a list of practitioners who have it anywhere?
Yes. Well, I don't think it's a published list. You're going to have to come by my website. Just give me an email somewhere. I can pass that on to the inventor, who will tell you who's got one near you.
Okay.
It's a very new machine. You know, there are not thousands out there, so, you know, you might have to travel, but it's a very fascinating phenomenon, and it'd be great to check it out if you're interested. You just have to email me, and I'll pass it on.
Okay, absolutely, and I'm sure people will. And again, if they go to Coast to Coast AM and click on your name, it's going to go to your site, and it's easy to go from there.
Yep.
All right, we've got David in California on wildcard line number one. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, I'd like to know if there's an alternative to standard vaccinations for my kids, you know, instead of just getting the shot.
Oh, my answer is don't do them. What's yours?
Lordy, lordy. Well, you're right. Yes, I mean, that's a big topic to launch into in the last hour. But, I mean, the answer is yes, of course, there are alternatives. One is to do nothing. You know, just rely on nature and natural intelligence. Obviously, you would take great care to see the child is, you know, experiences proper nutrition, a safe environment, and, you know, a gentle upbringing, so there are no major stress factors. I think I'd be easier if you tried the homeopathic vaccination program rather than doing nothing at all. There are some published programs. A man called Isaac Golden, like the, you know, the California State Golden in that sense. Isaac Golden has produced a magnificent book. If you Google his name, you'll find the book. And he gives a completely, I mean, I used to publish one, which was very good, but his is better. So I'm quite happy to step down and say go to Isaac Golden's website, get his recommended homeopathic vaccination regimen, and follow that. But if you, I'm going to say this for the other listeners, not just for you, David. If you're a person who is, like, not happy about vaccinations, but are too frightened to not obey, or you're under pressure from school authorities and so on, if you go to my website and go to the vaccination section, I publish there a nice, intelligent, sort of friendly kind of vaccination schedule from an MD. You know, he clearly looked at the problems and thought, this is ridiculous, doing this overload and doing it so soon. And he publishes a much milder and much gentler vaccination program. That might be a way to go too. I've forgotten his name, but you can certainly find it through the vaccination section on my website. That's free. You just go there, click on his page, and then download the information. But maybe Isaac Golden, yes? Isaac, G-O-L-D-E-N.
And it's easy to find, too. Thanks, David. I appreciate it.
I
think more and more people are not wanting to vaccinate, or certainly not on a schedule, as you mentioned, or would be looking at homeopathic things, but very often are corralled by everything from social workers to doctors saying, if you don't do this, social, you know, child protective services come and taking your kids. So one of the things that people can do is get some information before they're hit with the problem.
Right. I have something else to say on that. I might as well slip in here, Ollie. I don't think it'll come up again, will it? But, you know, we're all concerned about mercury, and there's a very strong perception that mercury causes autism. I have to tell you, I'm cautious about that story. I listen to stuff, and I especially listen to patients. It's very arrogant of doctors that don't listen. You know, if you listen, you get all kinds of stories and you learn stuff. And I've learned from one patient who had a child vaccinated. The child developed autism, you know, typical story. So they didn't allow the second child to be vaccinated, and the second child got autism. Now, mm-hmm. how do you explain that if mercury is actually the trigger?
Well, oh, sure.
We have to be cautious in what we're saying. We're worried about the problems with vaccination, but I don't think mercury is the real cause of autism. It's bad news. I wouldn't dream of putting it in anything I injected into a child.
Right, right. The thimerosal is bad.
Yeah.
But the other thing for a lot of people in autoimmune problems, and Gary Matsumoto did such a good job in Vaccine A, I don't know if you've read it, but is the squalene as the adjuvant in it. The squalene has just caused all sorts of problems for adults.
Right, yeah. But remember, this is the child I'm talking about, the same child.
Oh, yeah.
Any kind of vaccine. So, you know, the parents just followed the denial route and didn't allow it. So
right.
There's something we've got to learn here.
Yeah, there's probably an X factor that you'll come across in a couple of years ago, and then we'll get another book, which will be neat. We've got Bradford in Iowa City. Welcome to Coast AM, Bradford.
Yeah, this fascinating program. I've gotten some information about diet. I've been read a book by Dr. Peter Adamo. It's Eat Right for Your Type, and he mentions the blood type correlation with diet, and I've been practicing that for quite a while. And I'm a type O, and some of the things you mentioned as food products that I should avoid are in that diet. I was curious as to what your take on his stuff was.
Okay, what do you think?
Yeah, that is typical of what I was talking about at the top of the program. You know, set diets don't work for everybody. I have to say, Peter Adamo, God bless him, but, you know, he's been somewhat discredited by the fact that he's very elaborate theory about what was the first, you know, the original lectin. Scientists have now understood that that's not the primary lectin at all, so the timeline sequence on which he bases his theory is wrong anyway. But my point is, even if it was perfectly correct, or if you take the metabolic typing diet, you know, whether you're a protein or a carb type, this is still missing the point. All of these diets are missing the point, which is that some people will feel great on that diet because they're avoiding something that they're not tolerating. So they sing the praises of this diet and say it's wonderful, and the author publishes these stories, and that's what makes it great. But they're missing the fact that other people, even if it's their right blood group, or even if they're the right metabolic type, feel sick because they're not tolerating one of the supposedly allowed foods. And that's the real story that I'm trying to get across. You know, a fixed diet isn't going to work for everybody. Even, you know, the food combination diet, that's been around for over a century. You know, Dr. William Hay developed that in the mid-19th century, not mixing your acid and alkali foods, and you have your fruit in the morning and your carbohydrates and lunch and so on. Even that basically is an exclusion diet. If you follow that, it means you give up the breakfast cereal, you give up the dairy produce, or at least dramatically reduce your intake of these things. So I believe even that diet is working on the exclusion principle, really, and not all this elaborate explanation about acid and alkaline foods. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answers your question, Brad. Does that?
No, I think it does. I think it does, Brad. Thanks. Appreciate it. We got Robert in Chicago. Welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you. Doctor, can you tell me if does garlic in any way neutralize sugar once it's in your system? And does it have to be a natural garlic, or could it be like something like a garlic tablet? I was told that garlic neutralizes sugar once it's in your system.
I'm not quite sure I understand. Do you mean is the garlic there permanently, or is the sugar there permanently?
Well, neither. I think what he means is if you've had sugar as a substance, if you take garlic after it, it'll neutralize the effects of the sugar.
Oh, then there. I see what you mean. Yes, it's interesting, actually. This is a whole Arab philosophy about foods. They have food pairs. You know, if you have one, then you pair it up with the other food, and they will neutralize each other. And I'm sure there's probably some sense in that.
All right. Well, I'm going to leave that right there again, and we'll pick it up, I promise, Robert. And thanks for calling. And Dr. Scott Mumby will continue on with that, and we'll find out what foods should date what foods coming up right here with Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. Indeed, with Dr. Feelgood, how can it go bad, right? We also have Dr. Keith Scott Mumby, and fascinating discussion. We will get back to food pairs. We were talking about limes and coconuts with Harry Nilsson earlier, so I don't know. We're talking about what works from the previous caller. Will garlic neutralize sugar? It would also be fascinating to find out exactly what doesn't work, and then we'll get back to the rest of your calls as we finish the final half hour with Raleigh James, Dr. Keith Scott Mumby on Coast to Coast AM. It is Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. Keith Scott Mumby, and I just interrupted you there when we were getting to food pairing. What should date what? All right, garlic and sugar good together?
They can be fine. It depends on the individual. I think they can be completely fine. But, you know, combinations does raise a – shall I just talk about the broader principle for a minute, which is things acting together. It's a principle we didn't actually touch, but it's another reason why it can get confusing. You might, let's say it takes 10 points to get a reaction or a symptom, and say garlic is a 4 and sugar is a 4. You can eat either of those, or you can even eat them together, and nothing happens. But let's say you eat a garlic and an orange and some sugar, and the orange is a score of 4 as well. Then those three in combination can actually trigger symptoms. So how you combine the foods is definitely an important factor. But it's so idiosyncratic. Like, I don't really quite believe in sort of preset lists. You know, well, somebody somewhere is going to violate it. Anyone's allergic to lilies, they're not going to be able to take anything in the onion family, garlic or not. My own mother, bless her, is severely allergic to garlic or onion or anything in that family. The tiniest trace, she's in bed for a day.
Okay,
so
well,
it's no good saying combine that with, you know, it with sugar. It won't work.
But let me ask you this. When you're talking about a 4 and a 4 and a 4, I can see how that gets to 12. But is it possible? I mean, some things, obviously, if not affected by it, it's a 0. Are there any things that are a minus, so it would take that 4 down to a lower number?
No, not in the sense that you mean. No, there's nothing that, you know, is an all-protective. You know, listen, I've had people who are even allergic to water from certain springs. You know, they could take the Evian water, but they're not good with the Badoit or the Pear. I mean, it's as weird as that. There's nothing that's... I had a lady who had bloody diarrhea and colitis for 25 years till she came to see me, and it turned out it was lettuce. I mean, you can't think of anything more harmless than lettuce, you think. But there she was, eating all these salads and healthy foods, trying to beat her problem, and it was lettuce. As soon as she stopped the lettuce, the whole thing cleared up and vanished forever. And I said, listen, girl, you know, you'd be okay with the burgers and the fries. Just don't
eat
salad.
Lettuce. You know,
that's how it works.
I think what our previous caller was asking was whether the garlic would neutralize the bad effect of something. But what you're saying is no, something might be a 0, but it's not going to be a negative. It's not going to help something that's already going to be a 4 or an 8 or whatever.
That's right, yes. You can't undo an effect once you've got an effect. And it's no good putting something out as a maybe positive if you know that somebody somewhere, you know, might react to it. You can say certain food groups are good. I mean, in general, you know, the grains family are trouble, dairy's trouble, I mentioned the nightshade. But in general, fruits are good and veg seems to be pretty well tolerated okay. You know, fruits except citrus anyway. Citrus is a problem, but that's no surprise. If you think about the strong smell of citrus fruit, you know, and that means strong chemicals, so you're heading for trouble. You know, the citrus family aren't so well tolerated.
Right.
But fish and fowl, all of these. In fact, generally speaking, we sum this up by thinking of a hunter-gatherer's diet. That's not to say nobody's allergic to meat or fowl or fruits. Of course they are. But in general, we tolerate those foods better, you know, as a species, because what nature thinks we should be doing is wandering through the forest and nibbling berries, digging up roots, and occasionally we'll catch an animal, and we should drink water from the stream. Anything else is not natural. There are foods like grains, I mean, for all its reputation, or whole wheat, how natural and wonderful, it's just propaganda junk because it doesn't really belong in our diet. These are what I call farmer foods, and we've only been farmers for about 10,000 years, you know, or less than that even. You know, it's a very, very recent development that we have these kind of foods. And then when you take things like sugar and tea and coffee and alcohol, we're down to just a few centuries, you know.
Well, I knew citrus was knew citrus had to be on the list of being bad. It's the only fruit I like. So we got to.
That used to be a groan from most of my patients, you know, in my office.
Of course.
Okay, it was, all right, everything you like, you know.
Yes. That's the way this works.
It's often true. Yeah, it's so often true. But not entirely true, you know.
We've got David in the Yucca Valley, west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Good evening. You guys are good. Oh, my gosh. My call was geared towards metals, and then I had a comment afterwards. But I was really concerned about metals in our waters, metals in our foods sources, metals in even being at the dentist, byproduct living in particulate areas near military bases, bombs going off, residual laying on the silica, say you're out in the desert, and the process, there's something called cell food out there. I don't know if you know it probably is a great hype right now. My wife and I take it, and it says it helps to process metals out. No, that was number one, and the other one was senior moment there. But maybe I could get a comment on that particular note.
Okay, yeah, well, I was going to say it wasn't actually a question, but I'll comment on metals for a minute then, since you're searching for something. But yes, metals, heavy metal, the two most heavily visited pages on my website are parasites and heavy metals. A lot of people come to find out what the problem is and what you should do about it. Heavy metal toxicity is a big problem. They are poisons by and large. They damage the terrain, meaning that our bodies are not happy. It hurts the immune system, and the processes can be poisoned. Enzymes can be poisoned out, so they're not good news. And certain of them are specifically cancer-forming. Arsenic is for skin cancer. Nickel and nickel compounds, beryllium. Of course, you know, hexavalent chromium. That was the, the Erin Brockovich movie. That
sure.
was about hexavalent chromium. These are known to be cancer-forming metals. But even without being so extreme, heavy metals do cause problems by poisoning up the system in the body. So we have mercury, of course, the famous one, but that's not a carcinogenic one. Generally speaking, we want to get rid of these, don't we? And there's only one real way to get rid of them. It's a process called chelation. You can either take it very seriously and, you know, use intravenous lines and drugs to get this stuff out, or you can use a natural chelation process. I mean, simple plants are quite good. Cilantro, for example, is known to help. Pectin and seaweed, certain ingredients. So these kind of things are mild chelators. You could use those. Chlorella is very good. I mean, chlorella has been likened to a metal magnet. You know, it kind of sucks up these things and then you can excrete them. EDTA, which is a food additive, it sounds like a, you know, potentially toxic chemical itself, but it's generally recognized as a pretty safe food additive. If you take a teaspoon of that a day, it's going to absorb some of the metals via your gut with a process called ion exchange. So this is I know at least a dozen doctors that just take a daily teaspoon of EDTA and reckon it's doing them good. Some people even sell a suppository package, by the way, which is, I think, way overpriced and unjustified. I think you should just follow a teaspoon of the powder. But yes, I mean, the point is it's a serious health hazard. There isn't any question. We're exposed to far too much of it, and we need to protect ourselves and get it out of our bodies as fully as we can. Good nutrition of all kinds helps. Detoxing supplements help, and this process of chelation, you need to look into that, whether you're just going to use natural compounds or actually use the heavyweight things like DMPS and DMSA, which you'd have to go and see a physician about those. Generally speaking, in the U.S., it's considered to be an act of malpractice if you do it without the person being diagnosed as poisoned by the metal. In other words, they've had lead and they can't raise their wrist or something like that. So it's difficult to find the right kind of practitioner. Big issue.
Thanks, David. I appreciate the call. When you mention things like what you legally can do and can't do, then this gets into the heart of what's legal and not. And very often the very people not involved with any of this are making the decisions. But I did get a couple of emails asking your opinion of medical marijuana.
Okay. Well. It depends on what circumstances. Generally, I'm against it. That would be the quick answer, right? I don't see any justification for it. I don't see what it's about. But generally, the issue comes up, doesn't it, in consideration of a terminal patient who's, you know, knows they're going to die, and they want some solace and relief at the point when they do, in which case I definitely feel they have the right to do as they wish.
Well, sure.
But I would like to start backpedaling on the you're going to die and say, you know, what makes you think you're going to die? Let's take a look at the problem. I mean, there are people whose time has come. But, you know, people with very severe terminal cancer have beaten the whole rap and recovered, you know, when they were hardly able to stand. They've ended up back playing tennis.
But in terms of people who are relatively healthy, who just have maybe an issue of pain or whatever, who say, hey, this really helps me. What you're saying is, I assume you've done some research on it, and you're saying no.
No, it's definitely bad news. You know, if you're in good mental shape, you know, you've got a problem, okay. But if you're in good mental shape, you're going to damage that. And also, I tried to research this, you know, and I couldn't get permission from the government because I met a lot of people who had pronounced allergic reactions to marijuana. I mean, they went psychotic. And I did a few sneaky tests, I must say, and proved to my own satisfaction that that's the phenomenon we were meeting. I think the negatives are far too great. And I think, and if somebody's got chronic pain, you know, we should be looking at the chronic pain. Not, it's just another allopathic approach to dampen it with a drug. Just because it's a herb substance doesn't make it anything but allopathic medicine, in my view. You know, I often say to people, herbs, you think herbs are safe and friendly? Oh, herbs, you mean like opium poppy, or you mean like hemlock? Or, you know, herbs are not necessarily safe, and I don't think marijuana is. I think it's bad news, frankly.
Okay, so no research on it shrinking tumors or anything like that?
Oh, no, nothing like that, certainly, no. Okay. I mean, I would only accept it as maybe in extreme terminal cases to put the person at peace. But then, you know, what's the matter with the old Bromptons, which is just brandy and morphine, you know, just knock them out? you know, that you've got to have given up at that point. And I have great difficulty giving up with a patient.
All right, we've got Vaughn. He's in Goldwaite, Texas, east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, Vaughn. I have a question for Dr. Mundy about the connection with grandparents. The question is the connection any stronger for a namesake?
I haven't noticed that, but I get what you're saying. One of the things that we've learned in, you know, complex psychology over the latter half of the 20th century is the power of words. You know, the actual way it's phrased can create a mental condition, and sometimes look-alike words. You know, you hear a word like say C, which could be SEA or SEE, and the subconscious mind can confuse these. So I have to say that I'm sure that could happen. I don't know if you've got a specific circumstance in mind, but you know, I don't know any worked-up theory. You know, that, and certainly encountering it with the vocal, where I've just not noticed any connection between the names that are used. What exactly do you have in mind? I mean, is it your own story or something?
I didn't have any particular circumstance in mind. I am of Greek ancestry, and the custom of the Greeks is to name the children after the grandparents.
Right.
And I was not given my grandfather's name, but I was given his initials, probably by accident.
Yeah. Okay. I see what you're pushing towards, but I don't think so. What the big important thing is that emotions are, I mean, really, you've got to think of emotions as energies. You know, the word emotion means it comes from motion or movement. Emotions are energies rather than thoughts. So the important thing we found with the vocal is you're inheriting the grandparent energies, you know. So if that grandparent was an alcoholic, you might well end up being one, and so on, or abuser or whatever. That's the issue, the energies that get transferred.
Good deal. Thanks.
Interesting question. I shall keep my ears wide and flapping for that one now.
You betcha. John is in Salem, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi.
Hi, John.
Hi, I'd like to ask a question. I'd like to know what you think about the use of sound frequencies and radio frequencies to disrupt microorganisms, like Royal Rife research and related kind of things like that.
Right, yes. Well, of course, the work of Rife, I'm sure, is known to most listeners. You know, it's one of the great stories of, you know, brilliant discovery, advanced science, and controversy and suppressing the truth. It's all the stuff that we love on Coast to Coast. The best thing I can say, I have a friend who's tracked down a huge amount of research in this subject and has compiled a dossier, as it were, and lots of videos and original letters and documentation. Go and take a look at his website, which I believe, I mean, if I'm wrong, don't give up. Okay. Just go to my website and follow the link. But if you want to go straight there, I think it's rife.biz, rife.biz.
Okay.
And this is the best compilation I know on the work of Rife. And if you're asking me, do I believe in it? The answer is absolutely. But I have a big problem with a lot of, you know, Me Too Rife machines, so-called. You know, you go to these mind-body-spirit shows, and there's often two or three of these things working, and the immense amount of electrical pollution that they spew out. I mean, some of these machines make me and other people feel quite sick when we're near them. They're certainly not in any way therapeutic. You know, they're disturbing energies in a very bad way. I did it with a class once, and we just switched the machine on and all sat around, and four out of five people in the circle actually began to get headaches and feel ill and feel rather sickly and nauseous. We had to switch the machine off. So there are a lot of people making claims that they've got Rife machines, which I don't believe are authentic, but Rife's work, I'm quite satisfied, is authentic, that he was genuinely able to burst apart cancer cells and microbes using a specific frequency targeted for that particular organism. And it's work which I'd love to see rediscovered, you know, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, all right, John, thanks for calling. You know, that's interesting when you're talking about the knockoffs, because in virtually everything now, we'll see somebody said, oh, we've got them better for a fraction of the price. And then, of course, when they don't do what they're specified to do, or worse yet, as you're talking about, when they do harm, it very often in the populist mind really kind of discredits the theory.
Right, yes. I mean, Rife is then discredited, and not the banditos that are putting out these knockoffs that don't work. But, you know, there's it's a bit late in the program, I know, Rolly, but yeah. There is a bigger issue. You know, there's an awful lot of money grubbing going on in the alternative field, just the same as with doctors. You know, they're completely driven by financial interests. You can see that clearly. But it's largely true in the alternative field as well. You know, they take up the moral high ground and spit and spew about doctors and how money-motivated they are. I've seen exactly the same phenomenon. That's not to say everybody in either camp, of course, there are genuine, wonderful people in both camps. But it really annoys me, you know, to see sanctimonious attitudes from alternative practitioners who are clearly taking dollars and trying, you know, people that they can't help, and they know they can't help.
Right, or some that now are considering themselves complementary medicine simply because the insurance company is giving them reimbursement. There's all sorts of things. And suddenly it's, oh, well, I'll change my philosophy just a little if I can get, you know, payment from the Blues. You know, so, yeah, you betcha.
It's amazing how many people are, you know, doing newsletters and they're health experts that have never tended a sick, never been through medical school, and, you know, they've never seen a dissected body or anything. They don't really know the story. But they're suddenly experts. They're publishing stories and making money on the web. You know, it's a worrying trend, shall we say. There are some great people out there. I'm by no means including everybody in the sweep.
Well, I'm going to try to get a couple people in real quickly. Allison in Duluth, east of the Rockies. Really? Yeah, well, that would be east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
My question is about pop. I seem to be addicted to Coca-Cola, just regular, not Diet Coke. But
honey, you're not alone.
Regular Coke, and it seems to be affecting my vitamins and my body's ability to absorb vitamins.
Okay,
much fast food is engineered to be addictive. You know, they specifically make it that way. I'm sure, well, maybe not, but I was going to say, I'm sure you know the actual Coca-Cola story, which is they had cocaine in it, which is why it became popular. People got hooked. By the time they were made to take it out in the 50s, it didn't matter, because by then they got millions hooked on Coca-Cola, and the story went on ever since.
The 50s? Wait a minute. Wasn't cocaine out long before the 50s?
Oh, no, I think it was quite late. Well, all right, listen, let me step back and say I'm not going to swear on my oath, but I think it's much later than you think.
I was drinking this in the 50s.
Were you?
Yes, I don't remember any particular effect of that nature.
Oh, Allison. Okay. Well, okay, that's not the part of the story I wanted to feature, though. It was, you know, the sugar addiction, because the deadly part of these soda drinks is that they are creating osteoporosis, you know. Sugar brings out phosphate. That's just a chemical reaction. But when phosphorus leaves the bones, the calcium follows.
Yes,
whammy with Coca-Cola is that's got phosphoric acid. That's the brown stuff that, you know, will burnish coins for you. That also, of course, draws calcium. And, we're seeing girls now in their, like, 20s and 30s.
I hate to do this to you.
Partly due to sodas.
Hate to do this to you, Allison, and also Shyla and Rob. Apologies, and it went far too fast. But Dr. Keith Scott Mumby, thanks for joining us on Coast to Coast AM. No, I know that was terrific. You did a fine job, and hopefully we'll meet up again somewhere. And thanks for all the information.
Okay, it'll be a pleasure. I enjoyed it. Thanks. Good night.
Likewise. Thanks. Yeah, so there you have it. And many apologies to everybody who didn't get in. And many thanks to Kyrus Coburn, Wayne Roberts, Gina Yates, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasaur, Ross Mitchell, Lisa Lyon, Tom Danheiser, Trevor Oliver, George Norrie, Sean Compton, and especially to you for listening to me. Till next time, that's a wrap.